I want you to close your eyes for a second. Picture the most hostile environment you can imagine that isn't, you know, technically outer space.
Okay.
You are hovering about 18 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. The sky isn't blue anymore. It's shifted into this deep, terrifying, ink-black void.
And you can see the curve of the planet from up there?
You can clearly see it. It is dead silent. And it is cold. I mean, we are talking minus 50 degrees Celsius on a good day.
That is the kind of cold where physics just starts to behave very differently. Materials get brittle, chemistry slows down to a crawl. It is a brutal place.
Right. Now, in that environment, traditionally, if you want to fly a piece of hardware, a sensor, a camera, a communications relay, you're picturing a tank. You're picturing heavy insulation, massive heaters, shielding, big batteries, probably government logo stamped on the side, and a budget that looks like a phone number.
Exactly. Because the standard engineering response to hostile environment is armor. You build it big, you build it heavy, and you insulate the life out of it to keep a little bubble of warmth inside.
But today, we are doing a deep dive into a project that looks at that environment, that vacuum, that freeze, and says, no, we aren't going to build a tank.
Yeah.
We're going to build something that weighs less than 3 sheets of paper.
15 grams. That's the hard limit.
It sounds absolutely ludicrous. Less than 15 grams to survive the stratosphere autonomously for days at a time. So today we are unpacking the Stratason development blog.
Specifically, their manifesto posted on October 25, 2025 by the lead developer, Inglot.
And the mission here isn't just let's fly a light balloon for fun. It's about, well, democratizing aerospace engineering.
And democratize is a word that gets thrown around a lot in tech, usually to sell software. But here it means something very tangible.
Right.
It means taking capabilities that usually require a NASA-sized infrastructure and shrinking them down until they fit in the palm of your hand and then giving the blueprints to everyone.
So we have the, what, a sub-15-gram autonomous robot. And we have the Wide Open Science. But I really want to spend the bulk of this deep dive on the how. Because when I read this blog post, the engineering constraints felt like, I don't know, a masterclass in masochism.
It really is constraints-based engineering at its absolute limit. Usually in engineering, you solve a problem by adding something. Too cold, add a heater, signal weak, add a bigger antenna.
Sure.
But when you have a 15-gram hard cap, you can't add anything. You have to subtract. And when you strip away weight, you aren't just making it lighter. You are removing your safety nets.
Exactly. You remove the heater. Now you have to deal with the thermal chemistry of your battery failing. You remove the heavy casing. Now you have to worry about radiation or physical stress. Every gram you save creates a new physics problem you have to solve with clever software.
It forces you to be incredibly elegant. There's just no room for sloppy engineering at 15 grams.
Okay, so let's start with the device itself. The blog defines the Stratason as an ultra-lightweight platform designed for the 12 to 18 kilometer altitude range.
Which is a fascinating sweet spot. You're above the weather systems, so you aren't getting rained on or tossed by thunderstorms.
Right, you're above commercial air traffic.
You're not hitting any 747s. You are firmly in the stratosphere.
And the goal isn't just a quick up and down trip. They're targeting multi-day stratospheric flights.
That multi-day part is the real kicker. I mean, if you just want to go up and pop, you don't need to be smart. You just need helium and a parachute. But to stay up there, to survive, now you have to deal with the day-night cycle.
The blog makes a huge point of this. It mentions full day-night cycles as a primary challenge. And this is where that 15-gram limit seems almost impossible to me. During the day, you've got the sun, you have solar panels, you have energy. Okay. But at night.
At night, you are running purely on batteries. Yep. But you have to remember the temperature. Minus 50 Celsius.
Right. And anyone who's tried to use their smartphone on a ski lift knows what cold does to lithium batteries.
Exactly. It's not just that they drain faster. The internal resistance of the battery spikes. The voltage sags. Effectively, the battery thinks it's empty, even if it's full. The chemistry just, it stops moving.
And in a normal satellite or even a high-end weather balloon, you'd wrap that battery in heaters, right?
You would. You'd burn energy to keep the battery warm so it can release energy.
But they can't afford the weight of a heater or the extra battery capacity to run the heater. It's a complete catch-22.
Precisely. So they are caught in this vicious thermodynamic loop. They need to harvest enough solar energy during the day to run the system, plus charge the battery, plus design the system to survive that deep freeze without the electronics cracking.
The source text explicitly says this requires solving problems most embedded systems never face.
And that's a totally fair assessment. I mean, most embedded engineers are designing a smart thermostat or a Fitbit. Their biggest worry is, will this fit in the plastic case?
Or is the Bluetooth pairing fast enough?
Yeah,
they aren't worrying about, will the vacuum of space boil off my electrolytes? Or will thermal contraction snap my solder joints?
So it changes your component selection entirely, doesn't it?
Completely. You're looking at automotive grade or aerospace grade capacitors, special low temp battery chemistries, or, and this is kind of hinted at in the blog, using waste heat from the processor itself to keep the critical components just alive enough. It's a thermal balancing act on a razor's edge.
So we have this frozen, tiny robot. It's surviving the night, but it's not just floating there like a piece of space debris. It has a job to do. It needs to talk to the ground.
Right. If you can't get the data back, you haven't done science. You've just littered in the upper atmosphere.
The blog identifies LoRaWAN as the connectivity solution. Now, I know LoRaWAN is big in the Internet of Things, smart meters, agricultural sensors. Why use it here instead of, say, a satellite phone connection?
Two big reasons: power and weight. A satellite modem is heavy and it's power hungry. LoRa stands for long range. It sends tiny packets of data little chirps at very low power.
So it's like a whisper that carries for miles because of its specific pitch.
That's a great analogy. And when you are 18 kilometers up, you have line of sight to the horizon. You can see for hundreds of kilometers. So a 15-gram device can theoretically talk to a gateway receiver 300 or 400 kilometers away on the ground.
But that massive range introduces a massive headache. And this was the part of the blog that I found most fascinating, because it's a problem I never even considered: the regulatory problem.
Ah, yes. The bureaucratization of the sky.
Essentially, the radio spectrum isn't a free-for-all. You can't just blast signals wherever you want.
No, it's highly regulated. And here's the issue. The frequencies that are legal for LoRaWAN in the United States, say the 915 megahertz band, are often illegal in Europe.
And in Europe, that band might be used for cell towers or emergency services.
Right. So if your balloon flies from New York and it drifts over the Atlantic to France and you keep screaming on 915 megahertz, you're jamming licensed spectrum. That's a crime.
And usually with a big satellite or a military drone, you have a person in the control room. They see it crossing the border. They type in a command. Switch frequency plan to EU-868.
Exactly. Ground control. But the Stratosonde is autonomous. It doesn't have a high bandwidth receiver to take orders. It might be out of contact for hours over the ocean. It has to know on its own, with its tiny brain, where it is and what the laws are.
So how does a 15-gram computer know international law?
This gets us to the solution they describe: autonomous LoRaWAN region detection via embedded H3 geospatial indexing.
Okay, that is a mouthful of jargon.
Yeah.
H3 geospatial indexing. Let's unpack that. I did a little digging on H3, and it was a system developed by Uber.
It was. Uber needed a way to optimize ride sharing and map data efficiently, so they divided the entire world into hexagons.
Why hexagons, not squares?
Well, squares get messy on a sphere, the corners get weird near the poles, and the distance from the center to the neighbors varies. With a hexagon, the distance to the center of all six neighbors is identical. It makes the math for movement in neighbors much, much simpler for a computer.
Okay, so the world is a giant honeycomb.
Yes, and every single cell in that honeycomb has a unique address, an index. So what Stratosonde is doing is embedding a map of these hexagons into the chip.
So the probe wakes up, it checks its GPS, gets its latitude and longitude, and then asks, okay, where am I?
Right, but checking, am I inside the borders of Germany? Using standard geometry is actually really hard for a slow computer. It's complex point and polygon math. It takes a lot of CPU cycles.
Which means it drains the battery.
Precisely. But with H3, it just converts the coordinate to an index. I am in hexagon A7. It looks up A7 in a simple table. The table says hexagon A7 is Germany. Use the EU-868 frequency plan. It's an instant lookup.
It's like a digital passport combined with a law library built right into the firmware.
But here's the catch, and the blog is very specific about this: the full H3 library. It's huge. It's designed for servers, for Uber's cloud. It needs megabytes of memory.
And this device
has kilobytes. Maybe. A typical microcontroller might have, what, 256 kilobytes of flash memory?
So they can't just download the, well, they can't just use the standard Uber library.
Right. That's why they mentioned building H3 Lite. They are re-engineering this massive geospatial system to run on a microcontroller that's probably less powerful than the chip in your toaster.
That's the part that just blows my mind. It's not just a hardware challenge of make it light. It's a software engineering challenge of make it efficient. Every single cycle of the CPU burns power.
You're trading CPU cycles for legal compliance? It's a fascinating optimization problem. They have to compress the entire map of the world's radio laws into a lookup table that fits on a tiny sliver of silicon.
And if they get it wrong?
The device goes dark. It keeps transmitting on the U.S. frequency while over Europe, no gateway hears it, and it's potentially interfering with local signals. The mission fails.
Which brings us to their strategy.
Yeah.
Because with all these risks, the cold, the battery, the software, you'd expect them to just rush to launch and see what happens.
But this section called Validation First suggests the exact opposite. It's a very disciplined approach. They state clearly, only after validating these fundamentals will we focus on atmospheric science objectives.
That's so significant. They aren't trying to measure the ozone layer yet. They are measuring pressure or cosmic rays.
Oh, no. They are measuring the platform. This is the difference between a science experiment and an engineering product. They have a checklist.
Let's run through that checklist. First thing. Do thermal models predict actual temperatures?
That goes right back to our insulation discussion. You can simulate heat loss in software all day, but until you are actually in the jet stream with 100 kilometer an hour winds sucking the heat away, you don't know if your math is right.
Right.
If your model says the chip will be negative 20 degrees C, but it's actually negative 40 degrees C, your crystal oscillator might stop and the computer dies.
Item two, can it survive the night?
The power budget. They need to prove their sleep modes are deep enough. If the battery drains just 1% faster than predicted, the device dies at 4 a.m. before the sun comes up to recharge it.
Item three, do trajectory predictions match where it actually flies?
Crucial for tracking, you can't steer a balloon. You're at the mercy of the winds. But if your prediction model says it will be over London tomorrow and it ends up over Paris, you've got a problem.
And finally, does the autonomous region detection actually work globally?
That's the big one. Does that H3 light system actually switch frequencies when it crosses a border? You can test it on the ground, sure, but testing it at Mach 0.8 in the stratosphere, that's the only real way to know.
It feels like they're building the truck before they worry about what cargo to put in it.
Which is the only way to do it if you want the data to be respected.
Yeah.
The blog mentions scientific methodology and reproducible measurements. It's one thing to launch a hobby balloon. But Stratosond is saying, if we want to democratize science, the tool has to be reliable. It can't just be a toy.
And speaking of that community, the blog has a really interesting section on philosophy. Specifically, why document everything?
Yeah, this is the open source ethos at its core.
I love the peer review aspect. It's almost like an open invitation for criticism. Yeah.
At this level of engineering, you want criticism. You want someone to look at your schematic on GitHub and say, hey, that trace is too close to the ground plane, or your loop calculation here is inefficient.
It's better to find that out in the comments section than at 18 kilometers up when the device fails.
Exactly. And by making it open, they're solving the silo problem. Usually, if a company figures out how to make a battery survive negative 50 degrees, that's a trade secret. They lock it in a vault. Stratosond is publishing the thermal curves. They're publishing the failures.
So even if I'm not building a balloon, maybe I'm building a sensor for the Arctic, I can look at their data and learn from it.
You can lift their power management code. You can use their H3 light library for your own project. It lifts the tide for all embedded engineers, not just the aerospace ones.
The blog also gives a nod to the Pico balloon community. I wasn't familiar with this term before. What exactly is a Pico balloon?
So Pico implies very, very small. For years, ham radio operators have been taking those foil party balloons.
Wait, like a birthday party balloon?
Literally the ones you buy at a grocery store. They fill them with just enough helium to be neutrally buoyant and hang a tiny solar tracker on the bottom.
And they just let them go?
They let them go. And some of them circumnavigate the globe. 3, 4, 5 times. It's an incredible hobbyist achievement. But Stratosond is trying to take that hacky spirit and professionalize it.
The blog calls it moving from tinkering to validated thermal and power models.
Right. A Pico balloon is often a launch and pray situation. You hope it works. Stratosond wants to be a launch and predict platform. They want to turn a fun hobby into a valid atmospheric monitoring network.
And they want you to help. The Get Involved section is surprisingly open. It points to a GitHub repository, a Discord server. It just says, build your own platform.
That's the key, isn't it? They aren't selling a product. They are distributing a capability. They even mention they have interactive tools like calculators for Lyft and power budgets right there on the site.
It struck me that they explicitly say, no question is too basic. That feels rare in high-tech circles. Usually, if you go into an aerospace engineering forum and ask a beginner question, you get roasted.
Or just ignored. But I think they realize that to truly democratize this, they need a diversity of thought. They need the software developer who knows nothing about aerodynamics but can optimize that H3 code. They need the hardware hacker who knows nothing about algorithms but can solder a solar panel perfectly.
Before we wrap up, I want to look at the coming posts teaser. They promise deep dives on solar harvesting optimization, flight trajectory prediction, and LoRaWAN reception analysis from altitude. That last one sounds particularly tricky.
Oh, it is. Radio waves do strange things at altitude. You get reflections, you get interference from ground stations you didn't even know were there. When you have a view of half a continent, the noise floor, the background static goes way up.
So it seems like every time they solve one problem, like getting high enough to see the horizon, they create a new one, like seeing too much of the horizon.
That is the story of engineering. It's just a series of solving problems you created by solving the previous problem.
So let's step back and just summarize the Stratason vision. We're talking about a device the weight of 3 sheets of paper.
Floating in the near vacuum of the stratosphere.
Powered by the sun, surviving the freezing night.
Navigating global airspace laws autonomously using a custom-built geospatial engine.
And doing it all in the open, so anyone can copy, improve, or critique the work.
It is an audacious project. It really challenges the assumption that serious science requires heavy infrastructure.
The blog ends with a challenge. Let's see what we can accomplish with 15 grams and open collaboration. It really feels like they are throwing down the gauntlet.
They are. And frankly, even if the balloon never completes a full circumnavigation, the artifacts they are creating along the way. Or successes in and of themselves.
Failure is just data.
Especially when you publish it.
It makes me wonder about the broader implications. If you can replicate institutional-grade aerospace functions with 15 grams of hardware and a Discord server, what else is ripe for disruption?
We're seeing it in biology with DIY biolabs. We're seeing it in oceanography with open-source drifters.
If you can shrink a satellite to the size of a AAA battery, surely you can shrink a marine lab to the size of a soda can.
Or a medical diagnostic tool to the size of a postage stamp. The trend is clear. Smaller, smarter, and more open.
The Stratason feels like a bellwether for that future.
Yeah.
We will definitely be keeping an eye on their GitHub to see if they survive that first night in the cold.
I'll be watching the commit logs.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. For those listening, the links to the Stratason blog and their repository are in the show notes. Go build something.
Or at least go read the code.
Until next time.